Daniel chapter 1, verse 1 to 21. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Aspenazar, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing appetite for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shirak, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defy himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defy himself this way. Now God has caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and test them for 10 days. At the end of the ten days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetable instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Please be seated. This is the word of God. A rather long chapter, but it seems to be exciting, because if you read the first 6 chapters of Daniel, these are material for Steven Spielberg. You know, you see that they are eating vegetable and they're getting stronger and better than people who have the Atkins diet, you know. And also later on, you see dreams, you see lion dance, you see fiery ferns and all these things. Very exciting. But this chapter serves as the introduction of the whole book of Daniel. And in this chapter, a couple of things that we notice. The first thing is we notice that God is in charge. God reigns in daunting time. Nowhere in this book you will find this direct description of God's involvement. For example, you see that in the beginning, you see that Daniel gave us some of the backgrounds. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonian Empire, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, when you see the first verse, you will see that, oh, this is the course of history. Civilization crushed on each other, and then wars and all these battles and all these things happen. It is as if there's a huge, big wheel of history has been turning. And all the individual who are involved in that, we feel powerless. We feel being carried by the torrent of history. We've rushed into a situation. For example, Daniel and his friends, they were in this kingdom, the little kingdom of Judah, being crushed by the huge superpower at that time, the kingdom of Babylonian, and they basically besieged their capital and grabbed all these people and exiled them 1,000 miles away from home. Nothing they can do about it. But pay attention to the verb on second verse. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. The direct translation is God gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and some of the articles in his temple to the hands of the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. The active party at play behind the scene was God. He was the one behind the giant wheel of human history. He was the one who behind all these things that are happening, even though to a certain extent for the people who involved was daunting. God was in charge. God gave Judah and some of the articles in his temple to the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. Furthermore, if you go down there, you will see verse 9, now we are in a situation that Daniel and his three friends were summoned to the king's service, and they are giving them the king's diet. And Daniel decided not to defy themselves and not to take the king's food. The original translation of king's food is the rich food coming from the king. And they resolved that, I only drink water and eat vegetable. Now, don't read it as on our 21st century's standard of diets, like people eating a vegetarian usually is healthier than the meat eater and that sort of thing. No, here is a very, very daunting situation. The king assigned part of his food and wine for this young man that he captured. And these young men he captured, he picked them out of them. They have to be coming from nobility, royalty, and also they are good looking. They have no blemish, and they're fit for service, and they have the appetite to learn, and they are smart. These are the elite among the Jews. And they assigned them a good amount of food and diet so that they groom them so that one day they will serve in his court and even serve in his kingdom to rule and govern over those people he captured. And Daniel and his friend decided not to defy themselves. And they come up with this plan, test us for 10 days. Would that be literally 10 days? We don't know. Probably is a sufficient amount of time that we'll see the result. And look at verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. Or the direct translation of the original Hebrew should be, God gave Daniel favor in the eyes of his captors. God gave Daniel favor. Same verb as verse 2, God gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, to Nebuchadnezzar's hand. Even though when Daniel and his friends come up with this little test, God gave them favor. God is in charge behind the scene. God is actively working. And if you go down to verse 17, you see the same verb again. At the end of the 10 days, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. Even though they enrolled in the University of Babylonia, studying in the elite program, God gave these four young men understanding and knowledge so that they learn all kinds of literature and learning in that place. You see, these four young men, alongside with their countrymen. Their country has been crushed. Their capital city has been besieged. And even their worship center, the temple, has been defiled. And the foreign king came in and grabbed some of the things in the temple and moved it back to his kingdom as trophies of his victory. And these young men, feeling probably very powerless, frustrated, even very sad, going along with this torrent of history. You can almost imagine, like, you're watching a movie and all these big screen epic kind of story, that the history is moving its course and all the individual has been swept up and carried by the current. And then people complain, people were disheartened. Nothing I can do about it. There's nothing that I can even exert my energy and power can change anything outside. But in chapter 1, you see that God is actually active behind all this. Why did God give Jehoiakim to Nebuchadnezzar's hand? Why did he give all these people to his hand? Because Jehoiakim is a king that has exceptional heritage, and yet he decided to rebel against God. The background coming from 2 Kings chapter 24. 2 Kings chapter 24, you will see that Jehoiakim's father was Josiah. Josiah is one of the only two kings in the southern kingdom that he did everything according to the law and fear God. Now, Jehoiakim was the son of Josiah, and Josiah set an example for his son. And yet, his son still chose the wrong way. So therefore, God's judgment, God's anger, poured out to the southern kingdom and gave them to the hand of the Babylonians. At that time, the kingdom of Judah is a very small kingdom in the crossroad in the Middle East, today's Palestine. You can imagine Palestine on top of them is today's Iraq and Iran. That was the ancient day, the kingdom of Babylonian. So there's a huge superpower on top of them on the north. And to the south, to the southwest actually, is another kingdom, the kingdom of Egypt. These two superpowers in human history has been trying to struggle with each other, try to overpower each other. And guess what? The crossroad for these two superpowers to intersect each other is right at Jerusalem, that area. So Jerusalem was situated in a situation, in a place that is between the two huge superpowers, two kingdoms. When they flush their muscle, they want to fight each other, they want to compete for control of the area, then the kingdom of Judah will become the crossroad. The army will come through that. Almost as if, like, you're sitting in your living room, enjoying your dinner, watching your TV, and all of a sudden people rush through your front door and go out of the back door. And then later on, another group of people rush through the back door and come out of your front door. That's the situation they were in. They felt powerless. But behind that is God who are in charge. It's God who reigned in that kind of daunting situation, that he gave this little kingdom to the hand of Babylonian because of their rebellion, because of their sin. And we know that all these things that they're going through was because they turned their back against God. Now, then you ask the question, then what would, if we know that God reigns in daunting situation, and we know that sometimes the daunting situation is God's judgment to us, how would that make it better for us? For the people who were involved and swept up in that torrent, how would that make us feel better? It will make us feel better because we know there is a reason that God put us through that. We know that there's a reason that God put his people through that, because it's through his discipline, through his judgment, that he will refine his people. He will refine his people. And for the rest of the book of Daniel, we will see that. We will see that. God reigns in daunting situation, and that daunting situation could be because of our sinfulness, and cause that God judge up upon us. But the judgment itself is God's expression of his love, of redeeming his people, of disciplining his people, and bring them back to his presence. God reigns also not only in daunting situation, but also God reigns through personal faithfulness. God reigns through personal faithfulness. We see that Daniel and his friends, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, these four young men, they decided to stand their ground. They decided to stand their ground, not to take the king's food, but rather just drink water and vegetable. You know, for the Jews, one of the ways for them to identify themselves is their diet. If you go back to the book of Leviticus, you will see there's chapters after chapters of defining what is clean and what's unclean in terms of what you can read, what you can eat, and what you cannot eat. And that diet pattern, that diet regulation, set them aside from all the nations and tribes surrounding them. And it's become a mark and an identity for them that they have been set aside and forgot and forgot alone. That is the beginning of the idea of holiness. That is the beginning of the idea of sanctification. That God separate his people from all peoples and mark them, and they belong to him and to him alone. So it expressed in their diet practice. So when they were captured and moved to this new land, Babylonian, they want to stand firm on that ground. But pay attention to how Daniel handled the potential conflict situation. Verse 8, but Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God has caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. He did not go to the guard, the royal guard, and confront him in a way that is black and white, either or. He's proposing a way. Let's do this for 10 days, for a sufficient amount of time. You just give me and my friend vegetables and water to drink. And at the end of that period, you compare the result. And you treat us according to what you see. It's much more acceptable for the royal guard to go along with this proposal. On top of that, God already gave favor to him. So the way that he handled it, and you can see that throughout Daniel's life in this book, that he, as a minority of minority, in a majority culture that's hostile, that is overpowering to their faith. And Daniel continued to stand the ground, but when he stand his ground, he used a very skillful and very gentle approach in dealing with this situation. And God continued to give him favor. And as a matter of fact, you see the contrast. The four young men who only eat vegetable and drink water, as against those who eating steaks and lobster every day and drinking choice wine. And at the end of the period, when they compare, they are much more healthier and good-looking than the rest of it. It is a vindication. It is a supernatural interference of God, a vindication of His people. When they are faithful to God, God vindicates them. And that vindication, if you change the word vindication, is another word, justify. God justified Daniel and his friend. Just like God justified Jesus Christ. Because Jesus' death on the cross is the most injustice act of all. He is sinless, but he died for our sin on the cross. Because he's innocent, he cannot stay dead. And that is why God, out of his power, raised Christ from the dead to vindicate Christ, to justify Christ. So Daniel and his friends were foretelling to us that what Christ one day would do for his people through a person's faithfulness. Many got saved. Through Daniel and his friends' personal faithfulness, God's power demonstrated in the hostility of a pagan culture and a pagan religion. And later on, you will see that he started to have impact and influence on the most powerful man on earth at that time. You will see that Nebuchadnezzar continually confessed that Daniel's God is the more powerful and more trustworthy one. God reigns in daunting time. God reigns through our personal faithfulness. And God also reigns in the situation that we see there's almost no hope and no exit. God reigns. It's good news for all the sinners. When they enrolled in that 3-year program, learning all these things in the Babylonian culture, and at that time, what they learned were all pagan witchcraft, chanting, reading signs in animals, like reading the 5 pattern of birds, or, you know, open up the bird and look at the liver, and therefore, from all these things, you tell the future. They basically learning all these things. Later on in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, to chapter 6, you will see that when the king has dreams, they summon these young people to come interpret it for me, because that's what they trained for 3 years for. Daniel did not, in the way that he kept his purity, did not drop out from that learning program. He'd gone through all these things. To some of us, it's unimaginable. As if, like, I remember, like, 10 years ago when Harry Potter came out, a lot of Christian parents asked the pastor, should we ban our kids reading Harry Potter, you know, and try to find a simple answer? You know, can you imagine these godly young men being enrolled in the University of Babylonian, and the curriculum is to train them for 3 years to learn all these things? Magician, train them to be magician, enchanters. And if you continue to read the book of Daniel, you see that each incident, when the king has a dream or has a vision, they need interpretation. None of the enchanter and magician in the kingdom can interpret. But Daniel can do that. And Daniel do that was not through the means that he learned in Babylonian. Daniel can interpret dreams and can tell the future simply by praying to his God. He learned what they taught, but he never used it. But rather, he stick with his faith and go to his God for wisdom and for knowledge. So in other words, in chapter 1, you will see a weak, humble young man has no control, no power over his situation. But because it's personal faithfulness, he stick to his God and he run to his God for wisdom and for knowledge and for strength. And God gave him favor. And it turned out this little young man, almost like a smoking wick in a foreign country, he shined for God. And his wisdom and knowledge and strength outpower, outshine all the magician and enchanter in the kingdom. And he make a statement so powerful that affect the king. God reigns in daunting situation. God reigns through our personal faithfulness. God reigns through Daniel. And through Daniel we see whenever you are weak, my power, God's power, will manifest perfectly through your weakness. Whenever you feel that you are outnumbered, God is on your side because you are faithful to him. And most important of all, when Daniel and his three friends, being faithful to God and faithful to their faith, God used them in a daunting situation in Israel's history. The whole country was crushed by foreign power, and they knew through their prophets that this happened because they turned their back against God. They sinned against God. Now judgment came, as if God has abandoned them. But through Daniel and his friends, God was still with them. God was still with them even in the judgment. God was still with them even when they were in a foreign land and suffering. God was still with them. And these four young men served as a token of God's grace in daunting time in our lives. That he continued to remind us that no matter what you are going through, I will not forget my covenant with my people, and I will not forsake you, and I will not abandon you. Even just a few people, I will be with you, and my grace will be sufficient, and my power will make perfect in your weakness. And this is the opening chapter of Daniel that opened up the whole book. And Daniel continued to serve in the royal court, king after king, until the first year of King Cyrus. That's another kingdom. Not only Daniel outlived all his captors, but Daniel also, throughout his life, you will see that he only impacted a handful of people. But his faithfulness was recorded in the Bible. And God used him. And when they started out in the palace by sticking with their God, their purity, their holiness, not defy themselves with the king's food, that's the beginning, the first step for them to walk this journey of faithfulness. And this journey lead them step by step further into more and more trial and test. One is more severe than the other. And Daniel's whole life was marked by trial. Chapter 6, when he was thrown into the lion's den, he was in his 80s and early 90s. Can you imagine a life that has been marked by trials? But the amazing thing is God's grace was with him all the way. Yes, following God, following Jesus, it might lead you and me to the road of the cross. But God promised that my strength is enough for you. My grace is sufficient for you. And you walk with me, and I will guide you through every single step. My dear brothers and sisters, what sort of situation that you're facing right now? What sort of struggle that you have in your heart, in your career, in your daily life? Daniel served as an encouragement to all of us that even in daunting time, God is still in charge. He reigns over your personal life. He reigns over your career life. He reigns over all your lives. What we need is to be faithful to Him. No matter what, to be faithful to Him. And through our personal faithfulness, we will see His grace and His glory being shine. Let's bow and pray.